Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck. I appreciate all of you joining us on really the tail end of February. Boy, oh boy, this whole year so far, just these first 2 months, we've seen some really crazy trading, but there's been a lot for us to talk about. Last weekend's show, I really focused kind of broadly on the major markets, also a lot on the bond market. On this weekend's show, I'm diving into the commodity sector. A couple conversations I had throughout this week was looking at the rotation that we had seen within the commodity sector in terms of investors running other commodities higher and unfortunately for precious metals investors continuing to fade, especially the gold price. I'm kicking off this weekend's show with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management. Adrian also manages the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian, let's start off with the precious metals. Now, we are recording this late in the day on Thursday, so we do not know where any of the closes for this week are, but as we're recording this, gold is sitting almost right at $1,770, having a rough day on Thursday. This whole month, though, it's been pretty rough for gold, and we're testing out these November lows again. It really seems like everything is going against gold for this last 7 months during this pullback. What are you focusing most on when it comes to the gold trade and potential catalysts, either to the upside or the downside?
Good afternoon, Corey, and thank you for having me. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, technically, gold is looking pretty bad right now. As you say, flirting up and down, it's actually been lower for some of today, but flirting with that November low. But really, all year, we've seen lower lows and lower highs four times. And that, you know, I think four times constitutes a trend. So that's not looking good. I tell you, one of the things that I'm remembering, you asked what I'm focusing on, and I'll get to the second part of your question about catalysts, if I may, in a second. But one of the things that I'm trying to remind myself is, if you look at gold since the end of 2015, which was really when it bottomed, and you know, it started off pretty slowly and unevenly, but end of 2015 is I think the beginning of this bull market. It was a pretty steady and slow, but steady move up, you know, slowly accelerating until we got that spike in the second half of July and beginning of August. And that spike was completely out of completely above the trend line or the channel or whatever you want to look at. And I think because gold had such an extraordinary move from the low in March to the high in the beginning of August, a very unusual move for gold, 40% in 4 months is just astonishing for gold. And then, of course, that exponential move in the second half of July. I think gold is simply consolidating. And the sharper the rally, also the longer it lasts, this wasn't a very long-lasting one, but the sharper the rally and the more above trend that a rally goes, then the longer it often takes to consolidate. So I think, frankly, that is the number one issue. The market is just consolidating those gains. And if you look back, it's very easy to get distressed today, this month, last 3 months. But if you look back, you know, over 5 years, you wouldn't be overly unhappy about the way gold has acted for the last 5 years, I don't think. So that's it. And when you're in that kind of frame, people are looking for reasons or excuses both to sell, and they're less likely to be looking for reasons or excuses to buy. And so, I mean, I remember at the beginning of January, I remember reading a lot about, oh, the reason gold's going down is because the dollar's going up, you know, the dollar's recovering, blah, blah, blah. And you look at the graph and you wonder, what are people looking at a daily graph or what? I don't see a rally in the dollar. And of course, the rally in the dollar has now pretty much completely faded. I mean, but even at the peak, it was only up 30% of the decline. I nearly said since Biden became president, since the election. Mustn't be political, right? So it only recovered 30% of that decline at its peak. Now where are we? You know, we're at 90.14, and the all-time low of the recent all-time low was 89.43. That's not exactly what I call strength. So then the narrative switched to yields, and there's no question, of course, that yields at the long end are moving up quite sharply. Although at the short end they're not, so it's a yield curve move more than a broad interest rate move. But even where we are now, you know, the 10-year at what 1.3 or something, that's whatever inflation rate you want to look at, that's still not a very strong real rate. And of course, as we know, gold reacts to real rates, not to nominal rates. So are yields going to continue to move up significantly? I mean, that's an important question for gold. I don't really see it right now, frankly. I think there's a point when the Fed will want to push those long rates down, which they can do quite easily by just buying the bonds themselves. It's not surprising that market participants are wanting more than 0.3, 0.4, 0.5 to lend money to the U.S. government for 10 years. But that's not surprising. But at any moment, the Fed can just come in and start buying those bonds themselves, which is what they've done at the short end, and push those rates down. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I guess I'm talking a bit much. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I see this as normal market action, that just a consolidation after that strong rise, when everybody's looking for reasons. What will change? I think one of two things will change. One is you will just get to that point. You'll have the dramatic sell-off, and maybe it's coming tomorrow or next week. You'll have that dramatic capitulation when all of the weak holders are out, and then the buyers can come in and start buying. So in other words, just a simple market explanation, a market catalyst, nothing other than that sellers have sold and there's no one left at this price to sell. I mean, I'm not selling my gold. I don't know about you.
I still hold many gold stocks and continue to hold them. And I understand your comment there that this is maybe just a digestion of how strong gold did move, especially last year in 2020 and even in 2019. But Adrian, big picture here then, if you say that the bull market, or at least this uptrend, started at the tail end of 2015, that means we're over 5 years into it. Do we need to be worried about potentially this being the end of the bull market?
Good question. I was hoping you wouldn't ask. No, I don't think so, because gold cycles tend to be very long cycles. If you go back as long as we can see records, gold moves up and down tend to be long. And if you look at, say, the last 200 years, the shortest gold cycle on record was actually 2001 until 2011, a 10-year cycle. So if this is going to also be the shortest on record, we could easily have another 5 years. But historically, gold cycles have lasted almost as long as bond cycles, which of course tend to be generational things, but they've lasted 25, 35 years. So I'm not concerned about that. I'm particularly not concerned about it so long as the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world continue to create excess liquidity. Excess liquidity is the closest correlation to gold and silver that there is. And I don't see any sign that is going to stop anytime soon. In fact, the contrary, as you know.
Yeah, that's fair. And well, okay, let's then switch over to the other precious metal being silver, because silver, you look at the daily chart there and the action over the last 7 months as gold has been correcting. Silver has put in a very interesting, almost U-shaped bottom here, and the silver stocks have done better. We'll get a bit more into the gold and silver stocks here in a little bit, but in terms of silver, clearly being held up by its industrial uses, do you still think silver has to play some catch-up to where gold is, or what's going to drive silver from here?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's got a couple of things going for it. And as you say, not only has it been stronger, but it started rallying, you know, back in the end of November when, you know, we had increased news about, you know, vaccine rollouts and reductions in, you know, COVID expectations and so on. So certainly, I mean, I think, as we all know, but we need to go, silver has several things going for them. It is a monetary metal. And again, as I said, if you look back over 50 years, excess money creation is the closest correlation for the silver price, not the economy. But that may be changing, but that has been historically true. So it is a monetary metal, especially as, you know, gold moves up in price, so one unit becomes more expensive. You know, it's poor man's gold. Second thing, as you said, is it's an industrial metal, but I think so it benefits from the economic recovery, and we're hearing a lot about economic recovery. So people are thinking that's bad for gold. I disagree, and good for silver. I agree. But it's also a green metal, of course. Growing demand for solar panels, but more importantly, things that are not really widely known in the market. Silver is an important component of nuclear fuel rods. So if we start switching more as a world, it'll take time, of course, but if we start switching to nuclear, which I think is almost inevitable, you know, if you want A, efficient power, and B, you want green power, at the moment, nuclear is about the only thing, right? So we're going to see more of that. You also use silver in batteries. So it's not just, if it was just solar panels, I would be less enthusiastic. But it's a lot of green energy uses, and that is very, very powerful. And then, of course, the last thing is, and I'm not going to get into this Reddit short squeeze, I think they picked up a little more than they can chew with silver. But there is a genuine shortage of the metal. There are very, very low stockpiles. I mean, there's lots of differences between gold and silver, but one of the most important differences is, you know, the composition of the owners. You see so much silver was scrapped in the big run-up in the 70s. Now, there's always more that can go to scrap. But, you know, people were searching their attics back in the 70s to find, you know, grandma's old silver diningware set that nobody ever used anymore. You know, as I say, you can always find more, but an awful lot of scrap came out in those years. And there are no huge stockpiles. There's no governments with stockpiles as opposed to gold. There's no, you know, no big banks with vaults full of silver. So silver can respond very, very well to an increase in demand. So I think there's a lot more.
Okay, there's still some upside here for silver. And hey, it is encouraging to see silver holding up at closer to the top part of its range rather than seeing that downtrend in gold. Let's discuss the stocks, though. And starting with the gold stocks, the miners continue to be very weak. You look at something like GDX, and that has broken down from its November low, even after these miners have been issuing some pretty good earnings reports. Is it simply just a story for the gold stocks that investors are distracted by other sectors and even other commodities?
I think it's partly people are distracted by other sectors that do well. As we all know, you know, nothing begets buying like buying, and nothing begets selling like selling. So when the gold stocks have moved up another 20 or 30%, people will be piling in. So it's partly other things that have been doing well. People are distracted. I think it's also a you know, not untypical leverage to the price of gold. So as gold goes down, the gold stocks exaggerate that move down. I also think there's another factor at play for some of the stocks, like Barrick and Franco, which have been, you know, particularly weak. You look at who owns the stock, and the stocks that are most widely held by generalists are the ones typically that have declined the most. And when you think about it, that makes logical sense. You know, you go back 25, 30, 40, 50 years, every single mutual fund in the country had some gold or gold stock. You were a big cap fund, you had a gold stock. If you were a small growth fund, you had a gold stock. For the last 15 years, that just simply wasn't true. The generalists did not own gold at all. And there were reasons, and especially after 2011, the generalists just turned their back on gold stocks because, for all the reasons we know, they performed so badly, management's made such disastrous decisions, you know, overpaying for marginal assets at the top, writing it all off 2 years later. So the generalists just turned their back. In the last 12 months, with gold doing so well and the gold stocks doing well, you started to see generalists come back. And you'd look at some mutual funds, some still had none, but some would pick away. And the stocks that they went to most often were, you know, things like Franco-Nevada, which has proven itself in up and down markets. And also, following Warren Buffett, people jumped into Barrick. Now, of course, Mr. Buffett, in his wisdom, decided to sell. And a lot of the Buffett followers have also sold. I think that's a huge factor that's affecting some of those stocks. And as I mentioned, among you know, the leading stocks, the really leading stocks, Franco and Barrick have been underperformers in the last 6 months. But I mean, you look at, well, everybody, not everybody, no. Anyone who knows me knows I like Franco. So you look at Barrick. I mean, Barrick's earnings release last week was astonishingly good. They were firing on all cylinders. Everything was doing well. And when you look at what Mark Bristow has done in the 2 years he's been running that company, you know, net debt has gone from over $4 billion to zero. They're now net cash positive. Their mines are running well. The costs are cut. The dividend has been tripled. This year, they just announced last week a special bonus dividend they're paying, $750 million, which will be more than, for each shareholder, it'll be more than a year's worth of dividends in a special payment. I mean, everything was going well. And the things that weren't going well, like Porgera, was not news. Everybody knew it. And yet the stock and the pipeline is great. You know, there's nothing about Barrick at the moment not to like. And yet, you know, the stock just collapsed. And it was because Buffett sold. And Buffett did his filing. He obviously sold a little earlier. And, you know, you had a lot of people following. So, I mean, I think you can look at certain stocks like Barrick. And it's not the only one. I'm just picking on Barrick because, you know, it's under $20. It was over $60 in 2011. 2011, they had $12 billion worth of debt. They had hedges, right, that they had to cover at the high. They were overpaying themselves. We could go on and on and on. And then the industry was not in such good shape. Oil price was $120, $130 a barrel. And oil, of course, represents about 30% of the cost of running a normal mine. So, I mean, if you compare Barrick today with Barrick back then, yes, they were producing more ounces, but they were unprofitable ounces. And everything else, every other comparison, Barrick is an infinitely superior company today than it was back then. And yet the price is a third the price. It just doesn't make sense. Logical sense.
I think it just goes to show that a lot of investors are more or less ignoring the sector. Let's get out of here with one more comment then involving silver stocks. You and I have chatted before about silver stocks and how, quite frankly, most of the silver production comes from other types of assets, not silver-only assets. Where do you find the sweet spot in silver stocks, or are you largely looking to some of these other companies that have projects where silver is more or less a byproduct, but a large byproduct?
Yeah, a little bit of both, because you're absolutely right. Even the companies that still have silver in their name, it's not a dirty secret anymore. It's fairly widely known that the majority of their revenues come from something other than silver. And in most cases, it doesn't come from gold either. It comes from lead and zinc and tin. So a lot of these people chasing silver stocks are actually chasing lead companies. So we're doing a little bit of both. You know, companies like Pan American is an obvious beneficiary of higher silver prices, will continue to be, especially with the two huge undeveloped mines they have in Guatemala and Argentina. Who knows when they will come back on, but two huge silver mines. You know, if one of them comes back on stream in the next few years, that'll do wonders for the stock price. Wheaton, again, most of its revenue is not silver, but 30% of their revenue is silver. So 30% of their revenue being silver is one of the higher ones out there. But we're also focused, when I'm buying gold stocks, I also look at different times. And right now, I'm looking at the companies that also have copper, because I like copper, also have silver, because I like silver. And so a company like Barrick, for example, has about 6% of its revenue from copper, and that's likely to go up to maybe, not as a deliberate policy, but because of the mines, it's likely to go up to 7 or 8%. So we look, and that's not all from copper mines. A lot of that is just gold, copper porphyries. But Bristow, the CEO of Barrick, is doing the same thing I'm doing in selecting stocks. He's looking for gold mines where he has some copper. So that's one. Another one would be companies like, say, well, Osisko Gold Royalties. About 30% of their revenue is from silver. It's not well known. Royal Gold, 90% is gold, but their next major asset coming on stream, don't ask me to say the name, but the one in Botswana, the copper company in Botswana, they have the silver stream. So they have a lot of near-term leverage. When I say near-term, you know, the next year or 18 months. I'm a long-term investor, so a year is near-term for me. A lot of their near-term leverage and revenue will come from silver. I'm very, very focused or cognizant of things like that.
Okay. Hey, Adrian, it's great having you on the show. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on the precious metals. There's a lot to discuss here. And quite frankly, for gold, we really just need some sort of a bounce and some more interest coming into the sector. But this whole reopen trade seems to, well, just keep on running. So we'll see how long that lasts for. But very interesting close to the week and to this month. Let's see what March has in store for us. Adrian, great chatting with you. Thank you for taking time on this weekend show. I'll chat with you in another few weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. Thank you, listeners.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed that first two segments. Now in this segment, we are going to continue to focus on the commodities sector. I was intending on switching focus a little bit outside of the precious metals, but as I mentioned, the first two segments that I recorded with Adrian Day, we recorded those later in the day on Thursday, and I'm recording this segment kind of middle of the day on Friday. I am chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner over at CPM Group. And Jeff, we're going to have to look back at the precious metals, because you look at, let's start with gold. Gold is having a very bad day right now, a bad end to the week. You look at the futures markets, gold, as we're recording this, is down over $50, trading $17.18. On the spot market, gold is down to about that just above $17.20 level, but it has been slightly lower than that. Look, this is a big sell-off. It's breaking that support from November, that November low. And it has a lot of, I think, precious metals investors wondering, where is the next stopping point for gold? This correction already over 7 months long. We're down almost 20% in the high from August, over 5% down just in the first 2 months of this year. Jeff, what do you have to say about this consistent pressure that's being put on gold in this very bad end to the week and end to the month?
Well, a lot of it is technically inspired selling. And, you know, first off, let's be honest. The price of gold now is back to where it was in June of the year. And, you know, it did, in fact, spike higher and got up to 1960 briefly at the end of December, the beginning of January. But since that time, it's been falling. And a lot of it is like, you know, we looked at the market and we saw 17, you know, when the price was, a week ago, the price was 1820. And we were saying, okay, if 1820 doesn't hold, it's going to be 1800. If 1780 doesn't hold, it's going to be 1760. 1760 was breached this morning, and the next stop was 1720. In terms of where it can go, you know, we have been saying that we wouldn't be surprised to see the price fall to 1720 or 1700, maybe even 1680. We didn't think that we'd see it quite this week in the first quarter, but we thought the second and third quarters could see that kind of weakness. And we still think that the second and third quarters could see that kind of weakness with the price starting to recover, you know, in the fourth quarter of this year. One of the things I think that's going on right now is that you are in the post-Lunar New Year. And the way the gold market works, Lunar New Year is the time for giving gifts of gold. In China and in other Asian countries. And a lot of the gold dealers, retailers, and jewelers and coin shops will buy the metal in anticipation of retail demand. If the retail demand is not there, then they sell off their inventories. You know, and if you go back to 2013, when the price went like from 1640 to 1580, and then from 1580 to 1280, that sharp decline actually began after the Lunar New Year in China in 2013. And basically what was happening was that the retailers had bought a lot of inventory expecting strong demand because the price had fallen to 1580. And they figured a lot of people would buy a lot of gold during the Lunar New Year holiday. They didn't. So after the Lunar New Year holiday, the retailers dumped their inventory, and that took the price below 1580, and it just catapulted down. So we're sort of seeing the same kind of thing now that you saw back then. And I do think that the price, you know, our view is that the price probably finds support around, you know, 1680, 1720. So, you know, where we are now or maybe a little bit lower, but moves basically sideways for several months before starting to rise again.
Okay, so you do see eventually this pullback or correction slowing down. It sounds like we'll need a little bit of a digestion time to at least, well, stop that downtrend. But Jeff, if we look at other markets, and we'll get to a number of these other markets, the one that just is glaring, I think, at everybody is what's happening in the Treasury market with especially long-term yields. But now even short-term yields have started to rise. But you look at something like the 10-year U.S. Treasury note, we started February at a little under 1.1%. We're closing February over 1.5%. So that does naturally put a lot of pressure on the metals, especially without any sort of corresponding, really skyrocketing of inflation. How crucial do you think it is to continue to watch the Treasury market?
I think Treasury market's the end-all and be-all of it all. You know, first off, we're not worried about inflation. We don't think that inflation is problems. But I think the increase in interest rates is very central to the weakness that you're seeing, not only in gold, but across commodities. And it's not even precious metals. It's its other commodities, you know, have been hit too. I think that rise in interest rates is good, but I think you have to realize, I think there are two very distinct markets that you have to pay attention to. One is the longer term investors who say, oh yeah, but it's only 1.5%. You know, is anybody going to say, I don't want to hold gold and silver because I can lock in 1.5% in treasuries? Probably not, you know, and that's nominal. If you adjust it for inflation, you still have negative real rates, you know. So that, you know, the longer term investors are kind of perplexed at the weakness in commodities predicated on a relatively small upward move at historically low treasury rates. But then there's a whole nother market, which are people who use valuation models based off of the treasuries. And every little tick in a treasury, up or down, has an immediate effect on the stock market and on a range of commodities because, you know, they will mark up or down their price expectations or what is a market clearing price based on changes in the interest rate. So as the interest rate rises, all of your other assets should fall in value in order to remain competitive with treasuries. And that's one of the things that you're seeing. And that's particularly important because of the large amount of computer-driven, institutionally managed money across commodity markets and as well as stocks and corporate bonds and currency markets. You have a lot of machines that are value model driven. And as the interest rate ticks up, it says everything else should be cheaper.
Fair, but not everything is cheaper, right? The U.S. equity markets, they're showing a little bit of loss of momentum to the upside, and they have had a couple weak days this week, but nothing really corresponds to the weakness that we're seeing in gold.
Well, it's in gold and silver, but again, gold was at a record price 6 months ago, and it's come off a little bit. It's still higher than it was probably, you know, at any point prior to last June, the second quarter of last year. You'd have to go back to 2011 to see prices this high. So yeah, gold has come off from that high, but it's still relatively high. Platinum went from $800 probably 8 months ago to broke above the $1,000 ceiling that has really been in place for about 5 years, broke above 1,100, broke above 1,300 twice this week, and now it's off sharply. It's down below 1,200 again. So you're seeing a lot of these prices that had been inflating come off. You haven't really seen it in oil, and that's a strange one because oil has not only the interest rate factor, but it's kind of any number of bearish fundamentals, and yet the oil price is holding up relatively strongly right now. I mean, it's off a little bit today, but it's not off a great deal yet.
No, yeah, and to end the week, we are seeing some weakness across the board in commodities, but one of the trades, it seems like, has been this reopen trade when it comes to U.S. equity markets and even to commodities, because we have seen copper screaming higher. Copper's taking it on the chin again, to end this week, but it's still at, just under 420. Nickel is up at still over 850. And oil, yeah, that's down over $1 as we're recording, but that's still at $62. How important is it to understand that there is this reopening trade that's happening? Optimism abounds, it seems like, in a lot of investors' minds, and that is also contributing to, these market moves.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the reasons why we thought that the prices probably would be weaker in the second and third quarters is because we thought, in the first quarter, you've got this optimism trade. You've got the vaccines being approved and beginning to be rolled out. And there was this tremendous, the war is over. No, this is the beginning. This is D-Day. And now we have 18 months of working our way across Europe. So there was a lot of optimism that's been built into assets on the expectation that, the pandemic is now under control because we have vaccines. And the economy is going to be recovering. We had a very strong fourth quarter real GDP. And now you're starting to see people say, wait a second, yeah, we have vaccines, but it's going to be, you know, the third quarter of this year, if we're lucky, before you have sufficiently vaccinated people in Europe and the United States to start, you know, taking your mask off in certain company. And it's going to be 2022 before the world is there because, you know, the U.S. and Europe are bogarting the vaccines right now insofar as you can get any. So there's a reduction in the optimism vis-a-vis the pandemic. And then there's also a realization, and I think the Fed brought this up yesterday in a presentation. It's like, you know, yeah, GDP is one thing, but look at the jobs. Look at, you know, look at employment, and employment is still really bad. You still have 10 million people unemployed now that weren't unemployed in February of 2020. You know, so GDP is one measure of the economy, but a more important measure is employment, perhaps. You know, and not getting that, not understanding that, is what cost George H. Bush re-election in 1992. It was the economy, stupid. He was going around saying, I don't know why people are complaining about the economy because GDP is positive. You know, we're out of the recession of 1990-91. I don't know why people are complaining about the economy. And it's like, well, look at unemployment and look at real earnings, because those things are still very weak. And we're in a similar situation right now, you know, and you can have somebody say, well, look at how strong GDP was in the fourth quarter. Say, yeah, well, how strong is it going to be this year? And go away from GDP, go away from corporate earnings and say, well, what about employment, unemployment, real earnings, commercial real estate? You know, what's going to happen in the mortgage market? Start looking at what's going on in the municipal bond market over the course of the week. There's a lot of people who are starting to say, gee, you know, we're not out of the battle yet.
Yeah, fair enough. And I get that argument, right? There is a lot of debt out there and higher interest rates, even though you can argue, yeah, still fine, the 10-year is only at 1.5%, but it was well under 1% for quite a while there, almost all of 2020, until it finally broke higher. So, Jeff, you did bring up the Fed. And the Fed, okay, they mentioned that they're still a bit concerned about unemployment, but the Fed's been sitting on the sidelines for the last 7+ months, and it sounds like they're going to continue to stand on the sidelines. What's going to change the Fed's policy, and how important is it for a change in policy from the Fed to put a base in gold?
Well, I'm not sure what kind of policy change you're considering. I mean, you know, the Fed has made it very clear that they will be as accommodative as they need to be to keep the economy from deteriorating further.
So when I think do that they get more accommodative?
Well, you know, they've been pretty accommodative over the last 12 months already, and they're continuing to be pretty accommodative as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I think the message that they're trying to purvey is we will be as accommodative as we need to be, and we have plenty of bullets with which to fight this battle. So I don't know if they feel that they need to be more accommodative right now. They're assessing the market, and they're saying, yeah, there are problems. As I said, you know, they said, you know, yeah, GDP is looking better, but our job is to try to balance price inflation, prices, price stability, and full employment. And from a economic perspective, the employment is not responding in line with GDP, so we're going to continue to be as accommodative as we need to be. Not saying that we need to do more right now, and quite frankly, we're watching the fiscal policy and what happens with the $1.9 trillion relief package that is being used as a football in Congress. I think that the Fed is sort of waiting to see what happens on the fiscal side, but they're ready to be as accommodative as possible. I don't think they're going to be tightening monetary accommodation anytime in the near future.
Okay, and that's important to note then. Jeff, let's talk about some of the miners then. I know that you work with some of the miners. You interact with a lot of the majors out there, and
Look, you look at something like GDX, which is the gold miners ETF, that is now sitting at new support down in, let's say, the 30 to 31 region, but that has been weak. We're over 30% off of these highs. The majors have been generating some nice cash flow, some good earnings, but that hasn't mattered because of the fact that gold's moving down. How do you see the overall health of these majors?
Yeah, I have had some serious reservations about the majors, and I continue to have them. I think that, you know, I've been spending the week on a virtual roadshow in South Africa, so I've been paying a lot of attention to the platinum majors. And the problem is, you know, yeah, they've got stronger prices and have generated enormous profits, and their answer is, let's go spend this on capital expenditures rather than consider husbanding it or dividending some out and giving our investors a return. And I think that that's perhaps a bigger problem in the South African platinum sector right now than in, say, the gold sector. But the reality is that investors continue to be extremely wary of what the executive management of the majors is going to do with this newfound wealth. Are they going to squander it the way they have in past bull markets, or are they going to husband it and not go off and say, well, let's go buy some more overpriced assets during this leg up in the share market? So I still have a lot of reservations. I probably have more reservations about the majors now than I did, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But, you know, I am very cautious about them.
So how does that carry through the system? Usually, if we want big money to come into the market again, it comes into the majors. But do you think bigger investors are also concerned about these majors?
Yeah, they're not there. I mean, they're not racing into that market the way they have in the past, you know. And it's partly because I guess the big investors have gotten so much bigger that, you know, there really isn't any gold mining company that has a market cap large enough to really accommodate the largest investment management companies. Yeah, these are micro cap. You know, gold mining companies are micro cap companies compared in the minds of the largest asset management companies.
Well, these miners need to run higher, right? They're nowhere close to where they were when gold was last at 2000. But of course, we have pulled back from there. So, Jeff, when you look at the commodity sector in general, are you seeing optimism or any sort of hope when it comes to those investors that are saying, I want to invest in commodities, but boy, oh boy, just to end this week, it doesn't look great.
I, you know, what we're finding is, and it's the same thing that you're seeing in the bond market. You have short-term investors who are very much pessimistic, and then you have long-term investors who say, okay, this is a short-term pause in a longer bull market. And we've been actually saying for some time, for years, we've been saying that we could see the gold price start to rise and then sort of consolidate in 2021, 2022 before moving higher later. And I think that there are any number of investors who have had that same view. You know, maybe we're just talking to the same club that we belong to, and so it's, you know, a self-reinforcing commentary. But I think there are a lot of investors who think, okay, this is a pause. This is a pause that could last, you know, a year or two in a larger broad upward move in commodity prices.
Okay, so maybe just some more time then, hey? That's where we should leave it, is that the market just might need a little bit more time to settle itself out. And, well, quite frankly, bullishness is still one of the key factors in these markets, and that's why everybody seems to be distracted from at least the precious metals. But again, the base metals have been doing very well, so that is something to consider. Jeff, we're going to wrap it up here. It's great having you on the show, as always. I hope everybody enjoyed this weekend show. I did focus a lot more on the precious metals, but I think it was warranted due to this breakdown. Disappointing for a lot of precious metals bulls, but Jeff, even as you said, we're still at over 1700. And yes, this pullback, well, it was actually kind of expected, but it just needs to stop at some point, because quite frankly, there's a lot of people that just aren't paying attention to this sector again, unfortunately. But hey, Jeff, great chatting with you, buddy. Everybody, please go back throughout the week, listen to all those daily editorials and all those company interviews that I'm recording. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback. I'll keep doing it throughout the weeks. I'll be back with everybody Monday. Jeff, everybody listening, I hope you all have a great weekend.
Thank you.